Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Late this past winter, the Army Corps of Engineers spilled about 474 gallons of turbine oil into the Columbia River at the Dalles Dam. This is not the first time the turbine oil from the dams has spilled into the river. The Columbia and Snake River dams spill oil into the river on a routine basis. In 2014, Columbia Riverkeepers settled a lawsuit against the Army Corps to stop oil pollution from the 8 dams in the Columbia and Snake Rivers and report any spills to Columbia Riverkeeper. Today we talk with Columbia Riverkeeper staff attorney Lauren Goldberg and Dave Byers with the Washington Department of Ecology about their efforts to make the Army Corps of Engineers accountable for the despoiling of the Columbia River. Lauren and Dave, welcome to Locus Focus.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks, Barbara.
Well, I'm going to start, maybe this question might be for Dave, but I was wondering, how did you find out that the Army Corps or that the dams were spilling this turbine oil into the Columbia River?
When oil spills occur in the environment, there's both a federal and state law which requires the spilling party to notify the federal and state government. In the case of the Army Corps, they're very diligent about notifying us of spills when they discover them or have them. In many cases, a lot of the spills that they're reporting to us, in fact, over the past year, 25 of those spills were below a tenth of a gallon in size. So we're getting good compliance with notification, we believe.
So this has been going on, the notification's been going on for a while.
Yes, it has. And that law requiring notifications applies to anybody who spills oil into waters of the United States or into, in the case of Washington, into state waters.
Well, Lauren, why do the dams spill oil into the river? And it seems like it's something that shouldn't happen, actually.
Right, yeah, that's correct. You know, dams are essentially large factories that are plunked into massive rivers, and so there's a lot of oil used at these hydroelectric facilities. And unfortunately, the type of turbines that the Army Corps uses actually have a serious problem of chronically leaking oil into the river as a matter of course. The Army Corps also has a problem with these really big, high-profile oil spills like the one that was reported at the Dalles Dam recently. And then as a practical matter, there's lots of different components within the dam, from fish ladders to the turbines themselves, that require oil to operate in water. And so in general, the Corps is using a lot of oil. It's in contact with water, and these spills, they often happen, and sometimes the Corps has a very hard time detecting them because the dams are so turbulent downstream.
So it seems like this is a problem. Of course, our whole concept about spilling oil into water has maybe become a little bit more conscious in the last 30, 40, 50 years. Actually, I mean, this is the 50th anniversary, almost the 49th anniversary of Earth Day, which was triggered by a massive oil spill off the coast of California by Santa Barbara back in 1969. And it seems like that there should be more efforts to keep oil from getting into water?
We agree. And that's why there were a series of very high-profile oil spills at dams on the Columbia and Snake River in the early 2000s. For example, there was a spill of over 2,000 gallons of oil at the Dalles Dam. That oil was lost to the Columbia. And then in 2012, there was over 1,500 gallons of oil spilled at Ice Harbor Dam on the Snake River. And what's really disturbing about that oil spill was that the oil contained PCBs, which are linked to cancer. And there are major efforts going on in the Northwest, including on the Columbia River, to get PCBs out of the water, because we have some resident fish that, you know, spend their life in the Columbia and Snake Rivers with very high levels of PCBs. And so that was why in 2013, Columbia Riverkeeper sent a notice of intent to sue the Army Corps of Engineers. Our goal was to bring the Army Corps into compliance with federal law, the Clean Water Act, that the Army Corps is, well, it might be the federal government, that they're not above the law, that people in the Northwest care about clean water. We want rivers for fishing, for drinking water, for swimming, and that the Corps needs to get its act together. And under the Clean Water Act, if you're discharging pollution into the Columbia River, you need a permit. And those permits aren't just a piece of paper. They matter in the water. These permits require the Corps to monitor pollution and require the Corps to reduce that pollution, in some cases stop pollution. And so that was what our lawsuit was about.
And has the EPA issued any permits since you won that lawsuit?
No, the EPA has not issued permits. Our lawsuit required that the Corps apply for those permits, which they have. However, EPA has sat on those permit applications for a number of years now and has not taken action to issue them. Thankfully, our lawsuit didn't just stop at the requirement for the Corps to apply for permits. The lawsuit also required, our settlement required that the Army Corps develop oil accountability plans for 8 dams on the Columbia and Snake Rivers. And those oil accountability dams are the Corps' way of tracking how much oil is going into these massive facilities, how much oil is going out, and then what's missing. And they essentially help the Corps identify when there's an oil leak. The lawsuit also required that the Corps go through a multi-step investigation into converting the dams from using conventional oil in certain facilities to using eco-friendly oils. And that investigation has already led to the Corps to make some really important changes to reducing the use of conventional oils. And our hope is that later this summer, the Corps intends to make a major decision about a large-scale change from largely using conventional oil to using more eco-friendly oils at the dams.
Well, I'm wondering that the EPA not sitting on the Army Corps' permit applications, you can't blame that EPA on the Trump administration because this is back in the Obama days. So what was holding up the EPA then, and is it even less hopeful now that they're going to be cooperating?
That's a great question. Unfortunately, when it comes to pollution discharge permits, there's a backlog. Oregon, in fact, has the second largest water pollution permit backlog in the country. And EPA, while definitely faster at developing and issuing permits, also really struggles in terms of the staffing, having the funding to get permits out in a timely fashion.
And so that's the problem. And I'm wondering, is it worse now under Scott Pruitt, who's very busy spending a lot of money on personal effects?
It's a real concern.
Well, Dave, why is the Department of Ecology in Washington particularly concerned about these oil spills?
Well, anytime oil spills in the environment, it causes damage. And it causes damage in a number of ways. It damages our natural environment, our environmental resources. It damages cultural resources, and it also affects our economic resources on the Columbia River, which supplies a livelihood for a lot of our citizens in Washington State. And if you think about oil spills, we can characterize the type of damage it occurs into three main categories. We label those as acute toxicity, or a measure of how much of the molecules cause direct toxicity to the organisms in the water. There's a mechanical injury component to damage, which is a measure of how much harm the oil causes to organisms and habitat due to the physical impacts or coating or smothering. And the final one is the persistence effect of oil, and that's a measure of how long it remains in the environment before it breaks down. All oils cause damage, and we applaud the Corps and other power generating organizations on the river for switching to more eco-friendly oils. But even those oils, we'd like to see those stop too, because they do cause damage to the environment.
What's the option for them to use if they're not going to be using the current oils they're using?
Well, of course, prevention is the best way to stop the damage from occurring. That's preventing it from happening in the first place.
Well, I was thinking about how wasn't very aware myself about these oil spills, and I've been tracking what's happening on the Columbia River for many, many years. And when I got the notice about the oil spill that happened this past couple months ago, I remembered that there was an earlier one at the Dalles Dam. Do you think that you're starting to get more information out to the public, and that might make a change if the public knew more about these oil spills?
It wouldn't hurt. That all starts with notification from the Army Corps and the other public utility districts on the river, and we feel we're getting excellent notification from them, and that's where it all starts.
Well, that's great. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. Today we're talking with Columbia Riverkeeper staff attorney Lauren Goldberg and Dave Byers, who's with the Washington Department of Ecology, about holding the Army Corps of Engineers accountable for oil spills at the Columbia River dams. Lauren, is this lawsuit that you filed in 2014 the first lawsuit that the Columbia Riverkeeper has filed against the Army Corps, or has this been going on for a longer period?
This was the first lawsuit that Columbia Riverkeeper filed against the Army Corps involving oil spills from the dams. For really since the dams began operating, since the Clean Water Act came into existence, the Corps had really turned its back on the requirements of federal law, really critical requirements that would reduce pollution in the Columbia and Snake Rivers. Columbia Riverkeeper has been involved in other litigation involving how the Corps operates the dams and how that impacts endangered salmon and other endangered species, along with a number of other nonprofit organizations. But this was the first time that we took on this federal agency to try and reduce oil pollution from dams on the Columbia and Snake Rivers.
Well, you said something the other day when we were talking, something about the Army Corps having sovereignty. And I wasn't, it almost sounded like what they're in the same position as the tribes. They actually are the Army Corps see itself as a sovereign nation. But what were the real challenges with getting the Army Corps to pay attention to what it needed to do?
I think that's something that Dave could probably speak to first, because the Washington State for many years had endeavored to work with the Army Corps as a state agency to bring the Corps into compliance. So I'm happy to let Dave speak to that first, and then I can plug in.
Okay, so what do you have to say, Dave?
Yeah, so the Army Corps does have sovereign immunity from certain elements of the Clean Water Act, and that was granted by Congress. And that also extends to similar state regulations. So the state of Washington has a law very similar to the Federal Clean Water Act. In many cases, for example, when oil spills happen, the responding agencies, such as the EPA or the State Department of Ecology, we have authority to and responsibility to initiate a rapid, aggressive, and well-coordinated response to try to minimize the damage to environmental, cultural, and economic resources. Part of that means that our response costs are then sent to the spiller for recovery, and they pay us for our efforts. They're also subject to a penalty, which is intended by the federal penalty requirements and the state requirements are intended to be an incentive to change behavior and prevent future spills. And we also have something called the Natural Resource Damage Assessment, which is compensating citizens for the injury to their publicly owned natural resources that result when spills happen. So those three acts are financial incentives for spillers to not spill. When Congress gave the Army Corps and other defense agencies sovereign immunity, that means they are exempt from paying our penalty, state response costs, and our natural resource damage assessment. And in fact, when spills have historically happened on the river, we have sent these actions to the Army Corps, and they have politely reminded us that they are have immunity under the Clean Water Act and have not paid them. I'll contrast that with other hydropower facilities on the Columbia River. For example, if that same power-generating facility is owned and operated by a public utilities district, and we have many of those on the Columbia River, they pay our cost recovery, they pay penalties, and they pay the natural resource damage assessment.
Well, that sounds like a really unlevel playing field. I mean, do you think that that's the way it should be, or is there any effort to try to make the Army Corps a little bit more accountable financially for the damage that they're doing?
Well, that is a federal law, and we're subject to that too. So, whether it's fair or not fair, that's the way Congress wrote it, and how it's applied. The states do have a mechanism to seek their costs back from the federal government. There is a federal oil spill liability trust fund, where state response costs we can get reimbursed from the federal fund. That's managed by the U.S. Coast Guard. So there is an avenue for recovering our response costs. However, the NRDA, the Natural Resource Damage Assessment, we do not get that reimbursed to us. And that's unfortunate, because when we do get that damage assessment, that Natural Resource Damage Assessment, which is a monetary amount in Washington State, we deposit that money into a special fund we call the Coastal Protection Account. That fund is reserved exclusively for restoration projects which restore the resources which were injured as a result of that spill. So it's a way of compensating the public for the damage that occurred from a spill to our publicly owned natural resources.
And Barbara, I think the story that Dave has shared in terms of Washington State attempting to bring the Corps into compliance with laws designed to protect clean water really underscores the critical importance of public interest organizations and our ability under the Clean Water Act to enforce the law, even when it's the federal government. And that's exactly what Riverkeeper was able to do. We used public records from Washington State. We filed Freedom of Information Act requests to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and we were able to build this case to show that for many, many years, the Army Corps had been violating the Clean Water Act, was not complying with the law, was not subject to penalties, so therefore wasn't getting that critical deterrence to deter the federal government from continuing this pollution. And fortunately, the Clean Water Act does empower public interest organizations to take on the role of attorney general and enforce the law, and that's exactly what we did.
Well, I was thinking about that song in Holcomb Waller's piece, Notes from the Columbia Riverkeeper, Citizen Lawsuit. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about what the citizen lawsuit is, how it is enshrined in the Clean Water Act, and how it connects to what Columbia Riverkeeper does.
Right. So the Clean Water Act empowers citizen groups like Columbia Riverkeeper and individuals, neighborhood associations, to take the law into our own hands when state agencies, federal agencies like EPA, aren't enforcing the law. And so the idea there is, as a nation, clean water pulls strong. We care deeply about clean drinking water, having water that's safe to, you know, feed your family fish. And in the end, states, as a practical matter, Congress knew in the early 70s, because we tried for many years to have federal clean water laws that just the states and the federal government was enforcing, and it wasn't working. And so Congress empowered public interest groups, individuals, to enforce the law when state and federal agencies were not doing so. And so the idea here is that citizen groups can track pollution and can notify, in this case, you know, companies, federal agencies, and bring them into compliance with the law so that we get the benefits of a really kind of fundamental right to have clean water in our rivers and throughout the state.
So what's the mechanism of that? I got the sense from Holcomb's song that actually there's a fine that's levied that actually goes back to you, who then can use it to fight and work for cleaner water.
Right. So the way Clean Water Act enforcement works is there's three key components. First and foremost, it's about compliance, bringing a corporation, a federal agency into compliance with the law, stopping the pollution, reducing the pollution. The second part is the penalty. And under the Clean Water Act, that penalty automatically goes to the U.S. Treasury to fight wars overseas, wherever. But thankfully, public interest groups and citizens can negotiate with the defendant, or can ask the court to instead send that penalty money, that critical deterrence money, and send it to another nonprofit organization to do really great on-the-ground work to reduce pollution, so essentially to offset the harm from years of pollution. Now, as Dave pointed out, the federal government, there is a loophole in the Clean Water Act that the federal government is not subject to penalties. So in the case of the dams on the Columbia River, these years of oil spills, the federal government did not pay a penalty. But if it was a private corporation, those penalties are very significant. And then lastly, if the Clean Water Act, when a public interest group sues a corporation, sues the federal government, and wins, whether in a settlement or in court, the other side, the defendant, is subject to having to pay attorney's fees for the plaintiff.
So does in the case of suing the federal government, do they pay your attorney's fees, or is that also part of the loophole?
No, they are subject to paying attorney's fees. And that portion of the Clean Water Act, which is definitely under threat right now, given the federal administration, Congress, has existed, again, since the early 70s, and it's part of that critical deterrent effect. We don't want pollution. This pollution impacts many people. In some cases, you know, whether it's factories or, in this case, hydroelectric dams are discharging really serious toxic pollutants associated with cancer. And attorney's fees, having that thrown onto the defendant, is just one way of trying to deter private corporations, federal agencies that pollute our public waterways from polluting.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. Well, we're talking this morning here on Locus Focus with Columbia Riverkeeper staff attorney Lauren Goldberg and Dave Byers, who's with the Washington Department of Ecology, about something that a lot of us probably didn't know about, that the dams along the Columbia and Snake River systems leak a lot of oil into the water. So in the last part of the show, Dave and Lauren, I wanted to talk about what's being done. What kind of pressure are you putting on the Army Corps of Engineers? And also, I imagine the Bureau of Reclamation, which also runs some of these dams, to stop leaking oil. And if they are going to be leaking oil, to be using an oil product that is completely safe for the environment?
So Columbia Riverkeeper, first and foremost, we sued the Army Corps to bring them into compliance with the Clean Water Act to reduce pollution and the frequency of these oil spills on the Columbia and Snake Rivers. Our settlement with the Corps required that the Corps apply to EPA for water pollution discharge permits. So if you're a factory and you discharge pollution into the Columbia or Snake Rivers, you need a permit from EPA to do that. And those permits aren't just pieces of paper. Those permits require facilities like hydroelectric dams to monitor how much pollution, what type and how much they're putting into the river, and then to reduce that pollution, in some cases, stop it entirely. That is a fundamental component of the Clean Water Act, and for decades, the Army Corps had been pretending like it was above the law and simply ignoring it. And so first and foremost, the Corps has applied for those permits, but EPA is still sitting on them. So in the meantime, our settlement also required that the Corps every year develop and report on their oil accountability plans. So these are really straightforward operating practices for the Corps to track how much oil is coming in and out of the dams and to begin to understand how much oil is being lost to the rivers, which will inform the Environmental Protection Agency when EPA develops pollution permits for the dams.
So,
go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious about how to stop them from leaking. I mean, is it just inherent that they're going to leak oil into the dam, or are there better practices they could use so that there would be no spills?
It's not inherent. There are hydroelectric dams around the country and here in the Pacific Northwest that do not have the degree and frequency of oil spills that the Corps has with a number of the dams, particularly those dams involved in our lawsuit. Some of it has to do with the type of turbines that the Corps uses in the dams. It has to do with how the Corps is maintaining those turbines. It has to do with the extent to which the Corps is monitoring whether pollution is going into the river. So there absolutely are steps that the Corps can take to reduce pollution. Other hydroelectric facilities are doing that, and that was really our goal in bringing this litigation.
Now, I'm curious how the Army Corps' history compares with that of the other dam operators. I mean, the Bureau of Reclamation runs the Grand Coulee Dam, and I know that there's PUDs that run some other dams along the Columbia River, and I'm not sure if the Bureau of Reclamation runs any other dams, but are they spilling as much as the Army Corps dams are spilling?
I can touch on that. We do see spills from the other power generating projects on the Columbia River. Similar frequency and magnitude of spills. Some dams we don't hear a lot from, for example, the Grand Coulee Dam does not report as many spills. Different dam built in a different era, different turbine types, so that may be contributing as well. But we do see the public utility district dams also reporting spills as well, and they're of the similar size and frequency as the Army Corps.
Now, why do you think that the Grand Coulee Dam doesn't spill? I mean, it's the second oldest dam on the river. It's the only high dam on the river, or really high dam. I guess there's a couple others, Chief Joseph. And I guess it also makes me wonder, since it's about the same era as the Bonneville Dam, is the Bonneville Dam spilling as much as the Dalles Dam?
So the Bonneville Dam, this is a piece of 1930s infrastructure. The Dalles was built in the mid-50s. So the Army Corps really inherited some, I think, design challenges from aged infrastructure. We have worked closely with the Army Corps of Engineers, who has made a commitment to be better, to make improvements. They certainly have been good about notifying us when spills happen. We've worked with them on a number of prevention and impact minimization efforts. That has included, as you heard Lauren previously state, they're using a more eco-friendly oil for their turbines and hydraulic systems. They've installed, in some cases, oil-water separators and oil detection equipment so that they can be notified when spills happen. They've been doing turbine maintenance and upgrades as their infrastructure ages. In some cases, they've got in-water hydraulic systems that manage their gates or fish screening systems, and those systems have been replaced and are on a regular maintenance schedule. And another big piece that's important for us at Ecology is the piece that gets to prevention, and that's when spills happen. The Army Corps has been very open to inviting us into their facilities and working with them to investigate the root cause of spills and take whatever measures are necessary to prevent spills in the future. They're really challenged, though, with large aging infrastructure that uses hydraulic systems to lubricate large mechanical devices that are submerged in water. That's their challenge.
But it seems like the some of the problems are coming from more recent dams. I mean, the dams on the Snake River are only half the age of the Grand Coulee or the Bonneville Dam. So, I mean, and I guess the a 60-year-old dam is pretty old, but the other dams are like, what, 70, 80, 90 years old, 80 years old.
Yeah, I think John Day was completed in the early 70s.
Right. And then the Snake River dams, some of them were completed in the 80s, I think, or not, 70s too. But is there as much spillage up there as there is down at the Dalles Dam?
I don't have that data to suggest. Just based upon anecdotes, we do see we do get reports of spills from all of the projects. And in some cases, the Army Corps is reporting spills from their equipment and infrastructure. And in some cases, for example, the Lower Columbia and Snake River dams are used for navigation. In some cases, the Army Corps is reporting spills that happen from vessels passing through their lock system.
Huh. And again, my question was a little garbled before. How does the why is it that the Grand Coulee Dam has fewer spills than the Dalles Dam?
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I have heard in for some of the spills on the some of the projects, the dams on the river, there is a difference in the turbine type. So those turbines which have fixed pitch blades don't have the internal lubrication that the variable pitch blades have, and that is a big source of the larger spills that we've seen on the river from the variable pitch blades. And I'm not sure whether Grand Coulee, I don't know exactly what type of turbine blades they use.
Well, this question is totally off topic. It just popped into my head. But I read the other day, I think it was Priest Rapid Dams has some cracks or something. Am I correct there? One of the dams is on the Upper Columbia. And I just wondered, is that a concern that they're one of the dams? I mean, they were trying to make it sound like it was not a emergency issue, but it was a concern.
Yeah, aging infrastructure on the Columbia and Snake Rivers is a really serious issue. The hydro system is all connected, and so what we saw several years ago when there were kind of similar reports from Wanapum Dam, it can definitely raise serious issues for fish migration because of the way in which operators of those dams need to change the level of the river behind the dam, and it can create issues for fish being able to access fish ladders, as well as kind of unintended consequences downstream. So it is an issue on the Columbia. It's one we've been grappling with for many years. And as these hydroelectric facilities throughout the Pacific Northwest continue to age, we're likely to see more of these issues play out.
Well, so the dams above McNary Dam on the Upper Columbia, at least the upper part of the U.S. Columbia, several of those dams don't even have fish ladders, isn't that? I mean, unless they've been retrofitted since I studied the issue.
No, that's correct.
So I'm wondering how fish passage is a concern when it's already blocked when you get beyond McNary Dam, or when you get up to what's Chief Joseph Dam.
Right, and there are current efforts to investigate the feasibility and the potential for restoring fish passage to greater reaches of the upper Columbia.
Well, in the last few moments that we have, what's your prognosis for this? Do you think that your working relationship with the Army Corps of Engineers is improving to the point where maybe they will become more accountable for keeping the Columbia River cleaner?
I'm very hopeful that the Corps, the Corps is made up of people that, many of them live and work here in the Northwest, and I think that there is real potential for the Corps to take responsibility, and we've already seen signs of that for oil spills on the Columbia. I do think it will require, any great social movement, pressure from people who live here in the Northwest. And I think a lot of that really is going to come down to the states of Oregon and Washington, as well as tribal nations, and the extent to which other government entities throughout the Northwest demand from the Corps that it really get serious about reducing oil pollution from the dams. I think that the Corps has, as Dave described earlier, there are incentives for the Corps to reduce pollution. There is, potential liability for the Corps. And I remain hopeful, based on what we've seen since our lawsuit, that the Corps will take important steps, already has taken some through the litigation, to reduce oil spills on the Columbia and Snake Rivers.
So what can listeners do to put some pressure on the Corps? And maybe on the EPA, for that matter, too.
Right. Well, this lawsuit was made possible by people supporting a public interest organization, my client. So, quick plug, join Columbia Riverkeeper. Support public interest groups that bring these important, expensive, critical lawsuits against our federal government, our state governments, and private companies that aren't following the law. People can also reach out to the heads of Washington Department of Environmental Quality and Ecology, and just express concern about this issue. This is something that you're right, Barbara. It has flown under the radar for a number of years, but it really is an important kind of fundamental right for people to be able to use our public water bodies. And whether it's a private company or the government, nobody should have the right to pollute the river, spill oil, and not face consequences and not deal with their problem and correct it.
And Dave, do you have any final thoughts?
No, I'm hopeful too. I've seen over the years a commitment from the Army Corps to prevent pollution, to prevent spills from happening, and to respond aggressively when they do. And steady improvement over the years of the Corps making infrastructure advancements and system improvements to help minimize the spills from, infrastructure that was built in a different era before we knew the extent of impacts to the environment that oil spills have.
Well, Lauren, I wanted to give you an opportunity actually to make one more plug for Columbia Riverkeeper. Just tell people a little bit more about the programs that Columbia Riverkeeper is doing and how people can get involved as well, besides joining, but other ways that they can also get involved.
Right. Well, Columbia Riverkeeper, we're a nonprofit organization. We work in river communities up and down the Columbia and Oregon and Washington, tackling some of the biggest pollution problems on the river and some of the biggest threats from dirty fossil fuel industries like coal and oil to take over the Columbia River for their own private interests. So one way to get involved is to become a member. Go to our website, columbiariverkeeper.org. Sign up as a member. You'll get action alerts, ways to plug you in to really important social justice causes in Columbia River communities. And you, by becoming a member, you support critical lawsuits like the ones that we brought against the Army Corps of Engineers to deal with its oil pollution problem. We also have great volunteer events. Just this weekend, we had some wonderful Earth Day events up and down the river to clean up trash and restore riverfront habitat. We hold educational talks to keep people inspired by the Columbia River's amazing history, cultures, and ways to really make a difference. And people are. Columbia River communities have stood up to the frack gas industry, the oil industry, and the coal industry. And all of that really comes down to social change, social justice, people getting out off their couches and in front of their elected officials and standing up for clean water.
Well, Lauren and Dave, it's really good talking with you. Thanks a whole lot for sharing this really underreported story with us.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you.
And we've been talking with Lauren Goldberg, who's the Columbia River Keepers staff attorney, and Dave Byers, who's with the Washington Department of Ecology. You've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, I'll be talking with Sandra Steingraber, who's one of my favorite people to talk to, actually, a wonderful environmental writer. She just edited a new edition of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring and some of Rachel Carson's other previously unpublished environmental writing. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Billy Joel. Support the pledge drive, and thanks for listening.